This is Radio Influence.
Got him in the white trunks. He hurt him.
Beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he sports the top.
Whoa.
And here comes as a mention. And it's all over. It's
nice.
All over. First round knockout.
Big
he's out. Rich
one
Franklin
punch
retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
The UFC will return to Brazil for the first time since November's UFC Fight Night 100 on Saturday night, as UFC Fight Night 106 will come from Fortaleza, Brazil, and will be headlined by the phenom Vitor Belfort, as he will get back on track when he meets Ultimate Fighter Season 17 winner Kevin Gastelum in a middleweight bout. And we are going to preview this fight card on this edition of the MMA Report Preview Podcast. Daniel Galvan and I will give our thoughts on Saturday's UFC event, give our picks for the fights, and give a couple of prop bets that we think could come in on Saturday. Also, we will briefly touch on Friday's LFA 6 and Saturday's ACB 54. Now, before I bring in Daniel, I'll let you know about our sponsor, Fight TV. This weekend will be the biggest live event weekend in the history of Fight. They will be streaming a total of 16 events this weekend, and one of the MMA events you will be able to watch on Fight is the ACB 54 card from Manchester, England. That card is free on Fight, and you just need to download the Fight app on your favorite device to check out ACB 54 for free. You can download the app today by going to fite.tv/radioinfluence/. Once again, that is fite.tv/radioinfluence/. And that link is also available on radioinfluence.com. Of course, this podcast always available on radioinfluence.com. Also available iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio. If you could subscribe, rate, and review, we would definitely appreciate that. Daniel, it's been a couple days since we talked. How's things going, man?
Jason, things are going quite well in the Galvan household. I will say, I am not at my house. I am currently next to train tracks. Do you want to know why I am next to train tracks, Jason?
Do I dare ask why?
We are full speed ahead at UFC Fight Night Crossroads. I'm so excited. We always talk about Crossroads, and that's what we got here. And I'm so interested. I wonder which fight that is currently on the card will no longer be on the card but tomorrow, because that appears to be the curse we've had recently with the Nurmagomedov-Ferguson fight being called. But more importantly, when you look at this main event, when you look at this co-main event, you've got your Crossroads-type fight.
When you told me first off, you're like, oh, I'm at train tracks. I'm like, God, man, his Skype sounds wonderful.
Yeah, it's great Wi-Fi right next to his Starbucks. I got my chai latte.
Yeah, but, we were joking via text messaging of how quick it would take us to mention Crossroads, and definitely you can mention that there, with Vitor Belfort, and I think, even though he's won back-to-back fights, I would kind of put Shogun Hua in that case as well.
Oh, no, he's permanently just tied to the railroad tracks like a damsel in distress, despite the fact that Shogun Hua has recently won fights against, solid fighters in Corey Anderson and in Little Nog. I think that run he had right before that, where he lost quite a few fights, especially the Ovin St. Preux loss, I felt like that one really put the nail in the coffin in terms of there's always going to be a great amount of suspicion that, oh, potentially Shogun Hua is kind of past his prime. And obviously he is, but more than just that, he's just going to go out there and lose to anybody that's like a top 15 light heavyweight. That's what you would expect out of any fighter that's up there in age and has had that history of just straight up brutality that Shogun has. And that's kind of the similar thing with Vitor and Shogun, is that it's not really a shame that if you're Vitor Belfort and you're 39 years old, Jason, or if you're Shogun and you're 35 years old and you have that history of wars that they've been in throughout their career, it's not a shame if at this point in their career, they're a bit beaten down. And so I think you always got to be suspicious. But it is worth noting that if Shogun does come out here and get the victory, you're talking about a light heavyweight with name value that's won 3 fights in a row.
You know, I was thinking about this fight card, and I know we can say this a lot about fight night cards. I think pretty much more times than not, fight night cards kind of go under the radar. But I do feel like this fight card is going under the radar. But when you tell me, why am I tuning in on Saturday Night Live on FS1?
full disclosure, look, if FSU's playing in the ACC championship on Saturday night, I'm telling you, I'm not watching the fights live. Maybe I'll have them on my iPad, but I'll have the FSU game on the big screen. But in terms of, to me, the fight that has me the most interested, and I'm guessing that you're probably in the same book as I am, to me, it's Edson Barboza and Beneil Dariush. That's the fight that has me the most interested.
Yeah, I would probably put that right up there. There's another fight that I would really, really love to see. Like, if you told me, Jason, that I could only watch one fight on this fight card, Barboza and Dariush would be up there, man. Dariush is kind of sneaky exciting, and we already know the book on Barboza. But the fight I would raise to you is the rematch, Oliveira and Tim Means. Barboza Dariush probably means slightly more for the lightweight division than Oliveira Means does for at 170. But I simply think Means and Oliveira, between their two fighting styles and between the stare down they had.
Oh, man, I love that. Did you see the part of the stare down? You know, so they face each other. Then did you see this the part where they turn to the cameras?
I did not see that part. I just saw the crazy stare down.
Tim Means got down on one knee to mimic the first fight.
Oh, my goodness.
I was like, okay, Tim, I like you. I like you there. I love that stuff.
Oh, yeah, Tim is a crazy guy. Like, and that's been well established. This dude, I think I love Tim Means, but he does do things that are a bit peculiar, and it's usually like when he talks, right? Usually when Tim Means talks, he says quotes that don't make a whole lot of sense. They're usually kind of angry. Like, I saw a headline where he trashed the Fighters Association and said the Reebok deal was great or something. And you know what? It's probably true to some extent, but he says weird stuff. He calls out journalists. He reads one Bleacher Report article, and that pisses him off. But
he's
still
been mentioning the same Bleacher Report article for how many years?
I know. Like, and I've been on this bandwagon too, where I think we should just pretend like Tim Means is the worst fighter ever, and we can get a big shout out on Fox Sports 1. So Tim Means absolutely sucks. And I think he's going to get knocked down in the first round.
But by the way, speaking of headlines, you know, this week, you know, we're recording this here on Friday morning, which, by the way, we should note everyone made weight on Friday morning. So hopefully there's no chance. Hopefully I'm not texting Daniel in about, you know, 2 or 3 hours from now going, oh, by the way, they just lost this fight. We spent like 30 minutes talking about it. That seems to happen more times than not. It really does.
It does. And we got old dinosaurs on this card. So it's always a possibility.
Yeah. But it is Vitor in Brazil, so I think it's certainly to sit there. You mentioned about headlines. I saw a great headline on Thursday of this week. Of course, Thursday was beginning a free agency. And I got to give kudos to Sporting News. This isn't MMA related, just headlines that I saw. It said, DeSean Jackson to the Bucks? Backstreet Boy Nick Carter wants it that way. I was like, oh, that's a solid headline. Whoever came with that headline, you deserve a little bit of a raise. Or you're probably older and you remember when Backstreet Boys were a hit boy band.
Yeah, I have no idea what Nick Carter is. Is that a person? Is that
Yes. That would be one of the Backstreet Boys. He's from the Tampa Bay area. I believe the Backstreet Boys actually have a resident stay there in Las Vegas now. I believe they're at one of the casinos there. And, but Nick Carter is a huge Tampa Bay Buccaneer fan.
Okay, so that's the number one Buccaneers fan, Nick Carter. Interesting. Talk about celebrity.
Tampa's it's got rich history of baseball. So pretty much,
what?
Gary Sheffield's pretty much at every game.
Okay.
You know, back in the early '80s, some of those guys that played in the '90s, a lot of them came from Tampa Bay area, Hillsborough High School, Jefferson High School, Doc Gooden, Daryl Strawberry, guys that all these Tampa ties. Yeah, so you end up seeing a lot of baseball players live in the Tampa Bay area in the offseason. It was a big thing about Ryan Howard a couple days ago where I guess he's trying to build some privacy fence on the beach, and I guess some of the residents don't like the fact that he's basically trying to put a wall up.
You know what would be interesting? If they build a baseball stadium in Tampa.
Oh, that's a go-to line if you need phone calls on sports radio stations. Baseball Stadium Tampa, where should it go? Why does attendance suck?
Yeah.
That's you know, when you hear a sports radio host do that, that means they want phone calls.
That's 100%. I think I want to move on from talking about football, but you know why? Because it reminds me of my damn Texans who spent all that much money on Brock Osweiler and they traded him away. And in doing so, they had to trade away a second-round pick, which means we do get Tony Kruk.
They gave him a second-round pick just to get rid of him.
It's the most amazing thing. Who do you feel better about though? Vitor, Shogun, or Tony Romo?
Ooh.
Who's going to have the better 2017, 2018?
Who's blocking for Tony Romo for your Houston Texans?
We only have a good left tackle, Dwayne Brown. Basically,
I mean, here's the sad thing. The sad thing is, you just gave up a second round pick to get rid of a guy.
Uh-huh.
What are you going to give up to get Tony Romo?
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I hope it's a fourth round pick at the worst. Because, I mean, look, we gave up a second round 2018 pick, so, you know.
Hey, Daniel, here's a little advice for your Texans. How about you go draft somebody and develop them?
Jason, here's a little piece of advice. It's hard when you don't have the first pick in the draft.
Well, this year is a draft that doesn't exactly have a quarterback that should go number one overall.
No, absolutely not. It's although I want to put this on record here. I feel more confident about this than any of my picks. I think Deshaun Watson's going to be a good quarterback. He's got that Dak Prescott vibe of like, you know what? He's just going to be good.
It's a crapshoot. I tell you, I personally love listening to people who call themselves draft experts.
Mm-hmm.
Because I always say is, if you're such a great draft expert, why are you not working for an NFL team?
Exactly. These people that do the draft expert, it's like, oh, you think you're good at predicting things? Yeah, right. You're just making things up. By the way, I'm an MMA expert. But still.
Yeah, I just, it's that time of year. You hear every rumor and, basically don't believe anything you hear when it comes to NFL draft rumors. Just don't believe it. It's a lot of smoke screens. It's kind of like when you talk to fighters and they're, trying to tell you, they're trying to give smoke screens on what their game plan may be, And so what's a smoke screen Vitor Belfort's throwing out there? That he's going to go for a takedown?
Oh man, no, Vitor. When
you like that transition, don't you?
Beautiful, just a beautiful transition, like a Kelvin Gastelum transition from 185 pounds down to the 182 pound weight class. I think.
When he throws that 1-2, and then all of a sudden he goes for a double leg takedown to get Vitor on the ground, and he pounds him out on the floor.
It's incredibly likely, Jason. Incredibly likely. But I will say this, like when Vitor throws up smoke screens, it's much weirder. He talks about dinosaurs and life and the fountain of youth and whatnot. I think it's certainly the thought around campus that Vitor, you feel a lot less confident about him than you do about Shogun. With that being said, Vitor's losses are to pretty good fighters. They're to Chris Weidman. They're to Shakare. They're to Gegard Mousasi. With that being said, despite the quality of losses and despite the fact that he, most recently his last win was over middleweight title challenger Dan Henderson, and don't forget the fact that he does have a win over Luke Rockhold and Michael Bisping, I will say that Vitor, in his losses, independent of his opponent, simply looked like crap. And I would not be shocked if he returns with the win. He's made a career out of getting these crazy knockouts. But damn, Jason, at some point in time, father time has to expire, and Kelvin Gastelum's a pretty damn good fighter.
Yeah, I mean, I think father time has already caught up with Vitor Belfort. I mean, I think, look, I'm not saying that he can't win this fight. I think that in terms of prop bets, I think if you're looking to make a little wager, Vitor Belfort inside the distance plus 382, I think that, if you wanted to make a prop bet on that fight, I think that's probably the way you would go there. I am picking Kelvin Gastelum. I think he's going to win by stoppage in the first round. I think that he'll ultimately get the takedown, and, he'll just, the referee will stop the fight after he lands multiple punches. Vitor Belfort, I really beginning to wonder, is this a guy that we're going to hear Dana White say, Vitor, it's time to retire, and will he accept that?
Oh, will he accept that?
I think no. I think he is a guy that it's Vitor Belfort I see in Bellator within the next year and a half.
God, that's an incredibly sad thing.
He could be the Bellator middleweight champion.
Good point. Valid point.
Vitor Belfort, Melvin Manhoff, sign me up for that. I'm all for that violence fight.
Yeah, especially like running two weeks after Melvin Manhoff loses a kickboxing fight. I think that's when Bellator waits to book him an MMA fight, just as soon as been knocked out. That's their go-to strategy. I like the under in this fight in terms of prop bets, simply based on the fact that like You want to guess the last time Vitor was in a UFC cage in a fight he participated in, went to a decision? You have any idea when that was?
Since I have his Wikipedia up, that would be 2007.
That's 2007 outside the UFC in cage rage. That's his last decision, period. Last UFC decisions, like February 2005 against Tito Ortiz.
Well, I mean, if you want to go back to, since he's come back to the UFC, he's only made it out of the first round three times. That's John Jones, Michael Bisping, and Gegard Mousasi.
And you're talking about over 10 fights. I mean, you're talking about, I can't count that fast, but that's a lot of fights that he's participated in that have ended in the first round. So you got to feel
12
good.
12 total fights since he's come back to the UFC.
You're a beautiful counter. But the counterpoint is we haven't really seen Kelvin get a first-round finish since UFC 180 against Jake Ellenberger. I mean, you're talking about two first-round finishes in his UFC career thus far.
But, I mean, the thing you think about, you know, Kelvin and, you know, at 185, and I truly hope that he never, ever tries to go back down to 170. I hope he, you know, someone around him finally winds up saying, look, 185. I go back to that Tim Kennedy fight and just how amazing he looked there. And I just I think that he's got more paths to victory in this fight. I mean, look, Vitor Belfort could easily knock him out. I mean, you know, Vitor still has that power and speed in his hands, but you know, we always remember the last things we saw with a fighter or an athlete, and we remember what we saw with Kevin Gastelum, and we remember what we've seen with Vitor Belfort the last two fights. I mean, they weren't competitive fights. You know, he's no longer a top five guy in the world. And, you know, I was watching a little video piece that the UFC put out this week where Vitor is saying Kelvin will fear me. And, I mean, look, I'm sure Kelvin has all the respect in the world for him. And he also mentions that he believes he can make another run at the title. I'm like, hold on there, Vitor. I would not pick Vitor Belfort over anyone in the top five.
No. It'd be an interesting thing to go through that middleweight division and figure out which fighter you would pick Vitor over, because he does look like the switch is off. And again, we reiterate it time and again in that he has this incredible gift of he has straight knockout power in his hands and with his feet, with his kicks and his fast punches. So at any point in time, it wouldn't be a shocker if he comes out and knocks out Kelvin Gastelum, especially because Kelvin Gastelum, when I think of Kelvin Gastelum, I don't really think of like a counter-type striker. Like, I do think of a guy who's going to take some risk in terms of moving forward. But with that being said, when he does take those risks, I think he's going to go out there and have real success on the feet. And I wouldn't be surprised if we do see some engagement in wrestling. It's a clear-cut win for Gastelum. It's just a matter of maybe Belfort off his back has showcased some danger. But I think on the feet, you got to feel good about Kelvin Gastelum in 2017 compared to Vitor, but you do have to understand there is some degree of risk, Jason, in Kelvin Gastelum's approach to striking, in that he's probably going to leave himself more open for a Vitor Hail Mary than he would if he was a more cautious kind of counter-strikey karate type, if he was Lyoto Machida.
Yeah, by the way, so let's go back to the old top 10 UFC middleweight rankings. So Vitor's number 9 right now. Kelvin's number 10.
Okay.
So let's just go 8 and above. Who would you pick Vitor over? Derek Brunson?
No.
Anderson Silva?
Oh, damn. I want to see that fight. I would pick Anderson. I wouldn't feel good about it.
Robert Whittaker?
Whittaker? Oh, my goodness. Whittaker.
It's Mousasi, Weidman, Jacare, Rockhold, Romero, Bisping.
Yeah, I would just pick Vitor over Bisping.
I would probably. I mean, you know, it's.
I'm kidding. Although maybe.
That's is it in Brazil?
Is it? If it's in Brazil, look, man, Vitor Bisping is like an interesting fight. I think not really, but kind of really. I mean, that speaks a lot.
I think the UFC missed out. They should have gone Vitor Anderson. I think that would have been the fight to make here.
Oh yeah, dude. Oh my God, can you imagine that fight happening in Brazil, man? I mean, that would be just absolute. You would have more buzz for that card. No doubt about it.
Like I saw a video earlier this week from Guillermo Cruz from the open workouts, and he just titled it. He says, and you wonder why Vitor Belfort headlines in Brazil, and it was just a massive turnout for the open works out there in Fortaleza. I mean, look, I think Calvin's going to get the win. I think it's going to come by stoppage. I think he's going to use strikes to get that takedown, and he'll land, multiple strikes on the ground before the referee will come in. And I am sure that probably Kelvin knows this, that that Vitor's probably going to get the benefit of the doubt on the ground. So he's got to, he might have to throw maybe more punches than maybe he would necessarily have to if, say, this fight was in the United States.
Yeah, I would anticipate an incredibly, incredibly advantageous atmosphere for Vitor in this fight. I don't know. You don't really see it delved into too much how a pro or negative atmosphere in the crowd affects a fighter. I would assume not much, especially for veteran type fighters. But when Vitor makes that walk to the cage, I'm sure there's going to be some special thing in the air. That doesn't really help old BJ Penn when he's fought in Hawaii. May not help Vitor here. But again, just to reiterate a point that I want to underline, despite the fact that I feel incredibly confident in Kelvin Gastelum winning this fight in the first round, piecing together a 3-fight win streak, I think you mentioned it. The performance against Tim Kennedy kind of reminded me of what you can get excited about with Gastelum prior to the loss to Woodley and whatnot. So with all that being said, again, the caveat being that Vitor's most recent losses, where he's looked very bad, have come against high-level talent. Vitor has a big old tool in his toolbox that is a fight ender, and he's made a career out of just looking like a ghost, returning to form and being phenomenal. So those three things are in Vitor's favor. If we see the upset, it wouldn't be the biggest shock in the world. But if you just look at evidence, Kelvin Gastelum's the pick here, and I'm feeling a first-round finish.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a first-round as well. Co-main event, Shogun and John Volante. If I told you John Volante's only 4 years younger than Shogun, would you believe me?
No, I wouldn't.
Why do I feel like, Shogun was born in the same year I was, but I feel like he's much older than me. Maybe it's just because I've been watching him for so long.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's the trick with all these fighters, that literally these fighters like Shogun debuted 2002. You know, think about who was drafted in the NFL in 2002. Who was drafted? Let me look that up. 2002, first overall pick, David Carr. That was the first year.
I was like, man, was that the Texans' inaugural season?
Yeah, that was the Texans' inaugural season. And a lot of sadness in between. So Shogun's been around a while. And he's and right away, he was a figure, right? Right away in Pride, just a year later, he is putting on just phenomenal performances. Shogun is one of the all-time great YouTube highlight reels you show people on YouTube. He's the soccer kicks, the striking, the badass nickname, the cool brother. Shogun, who was a straight-up legend in the sport. And it's weird because you know a fighter is old as hell or nearing the end whenever we do previews. It's not only previewing how he contrasts with his opponent, but it's also remembering his career. And I feel like there's a need to do that every time we see Shogun fight. But yeah, it's interesting that you bring up the fact that John Volante is only 4 years younger than Shogun, because when you have a fighter at the point in Shogun's career, I think you're always looking to pick the opponent because you always think the opponent's in his prime. But this is a great fight for Shogun to win. Not only the difference in age, but simply put, skill level. John Volante doesn't have a whole lot of quality wins. He has a win over Corey Anderson. He has a win over Sean O'Connell. You know, those are solid. But at the end of the day, John Volante is incredibly hittable, and he is up there in age.
When you look at his UFC wins, there's a pretty similar trait with a lot of them. They're not in the UFC anymore.
Yeah, that is an incredibly...
O'Connell's not in the UFC. Perosh is retired. His last opponent, who I don't even think he's in the... I'm not sure if he's in the UFC anymore. Cody Thomas.
What's his last opponent's name, Jason? Just curious.
I'm not even going to try to butcher that name.
It's Sapir Beksoffarov.
Sure.
Yeah. It was a fight of the night, so maybe he's still in the UFC. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but you don't see that marketable win. But, you know, when I think of John Volante, and I don't know if you're the same way I am, the first thing that comes to my mind is very hittable.
Yeah, well, dude, I feel like one fight in his UFC career, he just already set the record for most punches landed on his face. That's been the track.
He absorbs 5.2 strikes per minute inside the UFC cage. Now, vice versa, Shogun, 2.49.
So, yeah. I mean, I think that's why you got to think Shogun gets the third win in a row, right? I would say Vellante's the better athlete. I would be more excited about his physical tools. It's worth noting he's obviously in a great situation. But I think Shogun has an opportunity to win three fights in a row here. I think he's going to do so. I think the technique is there. I think if the patience is there, which is not something you tend to see out of Shogun, is patience. But even in firefights, I wouldn't be surprised if Shogun survives them and gets the win.
And I think he's going to get his first knockout victory since 2013.
That would be amazing. And let's be real here. If Shogun wins this fight, he's like two wins away from a title shot. He may be
two wins? Maybe one win away.
I know you're right. I know you're freaking right, Jason. Right?
Don't remember, Dana White is letting us know that Jimmy Manuel is number four title challenger in the world. Just don't forget that. Oh, amazing that all of a sudden, a week before his fight, amazingly, he jumps up one spot in the UFC rankings.
Freaking rigged. Rigged.
Amazing. Dude, it's always amazing how that happens.
Shogun's the number six light heavyweight? Holy. Yeah, no, he's one win away from a title shot with the victory here. Holy crap, man.
I mean, if you want to play out this division, of course, we all know John Jones is coming back, or we hope, in July. So he's going to get the winner of Cormier Rumble. So there's the next title matchup. You've got Gustafsson and Teixeira coming up in, end of May for this card in Sweden. You got to think the winner of that matchup is probably getting the winner of Cormier Jones, unless Cormier beats Jones, and I think you would automatically go to the trilogy matchup there. And then I think you're looking at a Jimmy Manawa victory over Corey Anderson and a Shogun win over John Vellante sets up Shogun and Jimmy Manawa.
Yeah, that's – look, if you're Vitor, you lose your fight, you want to fight again, you move up and wait.
Because I think he should have already moved up in weight.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, and if you're a heavyweight and you feel like you have some ability to cut down to 205, make the cut down. This 205 division reminds me of like this Mad Max Fury Road, the setting it played out in, where everything was super dry and there was nothing there, no signs of life. I mean, this is, you know, the fact that Ryan Bader wasn't resigned, I think, is...
Well, see, here's the interesting thing, and I'm glad you brought that up, is he's still in the ranking system.
Yep.
And based on my understanding of when the matching period began, it started around February 20th and 21st. Typically, it's 14 days. It could have been his contract written, 14 business days, which extends out a little longer. But the fact of it has gone on this long and that we have not heard anything official from the UFC or Bellator on this makes me think the UFC is likely going to match it.
Yeah.
Because if you weren't going to match it, why would you be waiting so long? So it's got to be in consideration. It wasn't like a Phil Davis situation where once they saw that contract and what was written in that contract, they're like, see you later, Phil. Mm-hmm. Have fun. I was talking to somebody the other day about this. I mean, do you almost think that maybe the UFC is trying to screw a Phil Davis at this point? Like, you thought you were going to fight Ryan Bader. Oh, no, we're going to re-sign him.
UFC is petty as hell sometimes, Jason. I think our source on this is Bader still in the rankings, as you said. So, maybe the UFC rankings is the prevailing journalist of our times. I Googled Bader's name just to see the headlines, and you do have some headlines, but a lot of them are dated mid-February, late February.
I mean, look, at the end of the day, Ryan Bader's getting paid. No matter where he's fighting at next, God bless him. He's going to get a big payday. Mm-hmm. And it's worked in, and this is how free agency should work out for fighters, is the fact of, hey, you go out there and someone's willing to pay you top dollar, they're going to bring you in, so it's great for him.
I'll tell you why the UFC should re-sign Ryan Bader, because we're previewing a co-main event and we started talking about Ryan Bader. That's what tells you everything you need to know about the state of this 205 division.
Yeah, we
get depressed.
How many times have you brought up the fact of this is a prime example why Chris Weidman should move up to 205?
Yeah. I mean, who's Weidman fighting next? I know it's a tough opponent.
Gegard Mousasi. UFC 2. Oh, you didn't. Did you not see the awesome poster for UFC 210?
Is that the one where Anthony Johnson's face is big as hell?
Yes.
Yeah, that's
god awful. I mean, god, I
it looks weird.
It's one of those posters where, and I love the fact that DC came out and basically said, "What the hell is going on here?" It's so lazy. Like, I mean, when is the last good UFC poster?
Well, it's probably the last time they tried doing that thing where you had the fighter over the other one.
Well, they did that with GSP and Diaz. But, you know, the last poster I can think of that really going, I said, wow, that's pretty cool, is when they did that comic book theme for 181 with Hendrix Lawler and Melendez and Pettis.
Yeah, I'm going to look at that. Yeah, that's fucking. I'm sorry, I almost cursed there. That is flipping awesome. I totally forgot they did that. That's pretty good. The only other one I can think of that I really liked, Jason, was Pena and Shevchenko, the fight night or the Fox card, because it was the
with the old logos. Yeah, that was cool. Yeah, but more times than not.
Not creative.
I mean, like, look at UFC 209. That, I mean, as bad as UFC 210 poster is, it's not. You know, 209 was awful. I mean, it's like what is going on here?
Because
there's a lot of fans that would love to buy those posters. Which one thing I've noticed the UFC has done, and this is going back at least over a year now, is that pretty much they're just not selling the generic poster anymore. You know, someone can go buy it for like, you know, 15, 20 bucks, 30 bucks, whatever. That basically all they're selling is the one that has autographs on it for like 200 bucks. And, you know, I mean, I guess if you're an autograph collector, maybe that's cool, but I'm sure there's a lot of people that might want to just buy that regular poster that they just want to have in their man cave or whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, that's really cool, man, to have those posters as decoration. I guess financially people aren't buying them. I would assume that's the only reason why they would.
Yeah, I'm sure that's probably the case. I mean, I would think that probably majority of the people that would buy them would probably be at the event.
Yeah. Yeah, I would. But those are freaking awesome. I think we need to do more poster talk. I think if we begin to shine a light on these posters, we could change the game.
I think a lot of the MMA media is now kind of talking about how bad these posters look. It just looks like they're not putting any time into it.
I mean, we always talk about how the UFC is oversaturated with so many events. Maybe the poster maker is just stressed the F out.
I have noticed that with the poster for this event, they went the Bellator route with the fighter screaming mouth wide open so you see all his teeth. I've seen they did that for this one. I can't imagine too many people are looking for the UFC Fight Night 106 poster. I guess maybe if you're a big Kevin Gastelum fan, maybe you are.
Yeah, maybe if you're Benil Dariush's stepson or uncle or whatever, you know,
back to the 205-pound division, at least Misha Cirkunov is back. I mean, I think that's another guy you have to put into the equation of a fight or two away from being right there for a title shot.
Yeah, Misha Cirkunov is the type of fighter that you get excited about because he's not old as hell, and he's showcased significant upside. And you're doing a short list of guys to get excited about at 205. Misha Cirkunov is number one on that list.
Who's number two?
Number two, gosh, it's a hard question to answer.
I mean, look, no doubt, Cirkunov would be number one. But who's that guy that's coming up the 205 rankings? And you're like, oh man, I can't wait to see that guy fight.
Oh man, I would probably have to say, I mean, Corey Anderson's the other guy because he's flashed potential. Man, he's flashed some significant issues.
Is it Jimmy Manoa?
It's Tyson Pedro, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, with Manoa, I mean, the thing about him, and
Manoa's old, dude.
Yeah, and he's had two opportunities before to get that step up in competition, and he's not been able to get victories against Gustafsson and against Rumble. I mean, and obviously those are two of the top four guys in the world, but there needs to be an infusion of talent into this division, and maybe Tyson Pedro is one of those guys. But Tyson Pedro, he's now has six pro fights. I mean, whew.
Yeah, I know. It's a big
Know, do you really want to rush that guy?
Yeah, you really don't, but it's almost a situation where the need is there. And to be completely honest, if you rush him into the 205 division, he's going to win fights anyway because the division sucks. So
I mean, look, no disrespect to John Volante, but what's it say about the division if John Volante, a guy who's been, you know, up and down in the UFC, is ranked number 12?
Yeah, and what's it say if in this fight he's only a +120, you know, against the sixth heavyweight in the world?
I think that has to do more with people down on Shogun.
I mean, what would the odds be of a Volante-Pedro fight, just to keep that in mind? I'm not sure who'd be the favorite, but I would. I would pick Pedro on that fight. Sure, yeah. So he should be Rush.
It's crazy to think of, when you look at that 205 pound rankings, and you just go, man, you know, you just need an infusion of talent there. But I'm gonna go Shogun by TKO in the second round. What's your pick on the fight?
I don't know. I guess I'll go Shogun decision. Oh, man, I hate that pick. I'll go Shogun TKO as well. I would be on pins and needles the entire fight.
There's no way John Volante wins the decision in Brazil.
Oh, yeah, no way he won the decision. He could win a finish. You can't – the same way you can't roll out Vitor knocking out Kelvin, you can't roll out Shogun looking like crap and getting finished because he's old too. So here is the principle of old man fights. At any given second, they can look like the pumpkin – and I don't think that's going to happen here. I think Shogun gets his third win in a row.
Yeah, I like it there. In the matchup we talked about earlier, one that we both love, Edson Barboza and Beneil Dariush. You know, when you think of Edson Barboza, you know, the first thing you always come to mind is that knockout he had over Terry Adam. That's going to be on the UFC highlight reel for decades to come. He has won back-to-back fights, had that great decision victories over Anthony Pettis and Gilbert Melendez. Of course, prior to that, he had lost to Tony Ferguson. I mean, obviously the number two title challenger there in the world. And, of course, Beneil Dariush is a guy that, you know, had that loss to Michael Chiesa last year, then followed that up with a knockout win over James Vick and coming off a decision win back in November against Rashid Magomedov. And this matchup is a tough one for me to call. I think ultimately it's going to go all three rounds, and I think that what Dariush will get a decision win, and I think what he'll ultimately will lead to the decision win for him is just merely applying pressure, being the guy coming forward, and pretty much not allowing Edson Barboza to get off those massive kicks.
Yeah, man. This is the first pick where we differ, although I feel very, very, you know, not confident about it.
And I'm with you. I'm not confident in my pick either.
And it's largely based on what you said, my lack of confidence, is that Barboza, man, he thrives when he controls the pace on the feet. I mean, if you let me know that Barboza is going to control the pace on the feet, I'm going to like him in a stand-up battle against mostly everybody in his division, but Dariush may not let him do so, and that's when you begin to have issues with Edson on the feet. Still, regardless, I like Barboza. I simply think the win over Melendez was solid, I favor him on the striking department, despite the fact that Dariush has some of the tools to make Barboza uncomfortable. I still think technically you got to feel great about the danger Barboza presents in the standard department. And I would worry about Dariush maybe later in this fight, taking this fight to the ground to secure and steal some rounds. I would anticipate some close rounds. And I don't know if I see a finish here, but Barboza's my pick.
Yeah, I think ultimately it goes 15 minutes, but yeah, not surprised at all. You know, we always like to call our hipster fight of the fight card. Is the hipster pick Formiga and Borg?
No, that's a mainstream, bro. Hipster pick, you gotta dig deeper, Jason. You gotta talk about Paulo Henrique Costa and Gareth McClellan. Talk about some fighters you've never seen fight before, Jason. Not Ray Borg and Juicier Formiga. I mean, look, I see what you're putting down. This fight is awesome. This fight is one of the top fights on the card. Formiga, Borg, Dariush Barboza, Oliveira Means. That's what the MMA hipster is looking forward to. So I think this is a phenomenal freaking fight, right? Like, these are two interesting flyweight fighters. Ray Borg is a fighter who I have just not really had a great idea of how talented he was for the longest time. There are so many of his victories where I just simply did not pick him. And he looked great against Luis Smolka. He missed weight in that fight. But he really has flashed an incredible amount of upside. Against Juicio Formiga, though, this is a matter of the younger 23-year-old flyweight really getting an incredible test in a guy who has been a part of the flyweight picture long before the UFC even had the division.
Yeah, you know, if we were doing this show before the weigh-ins, I think we probably both would have picked Ray Borg to miss weight, since he had missed weight in two of his previous, you know, three fights. And both those were what ended up being catchweight. He did get a win against Lewis Smoka and also against Gene Herrera. You know, he is 4-1 in his last five fights. You look at his losses in the UFC coming against Dustin Ortiz, which was a split decision back in 2014, and a decision loss last year against Justin Scoggins. And when you look at Justin Formiga, he's one of those guys that I think we've always kind of felt like he was always that one win away from getting a title matchup. I think you go back, you know, you look at his losses in the UFC, it's to the top guys, John Dotson, Joseph Benavidez, and Henry Cejudo. He is coming off a decision win against Dustin Ortiz. And I, you know, when I was looking at prop bets for this fight, you know, I think it's likely it goes all three rounds. But man, Justin Formiga to win by submission plus 795, that's a tempting prop bet.
That's juicy, Jason. Juicy like a red steak. I mean, I like Formiga to win this fight too. It's simply a matter of maturity in his approach, intelligence in his fight game, and the skill level may be a bit too much for a young fighter in Borg. So when you begin to look at those prop bets, I think if you like Formiga, it comes down to how risky you are. If you're a safer type guy, you go with the Formiga decision one at plus 211. But if you like taking risk, if you're a Jason Floyd type guy, that Formiga submission at plus 795 is incredibly, incredibly juicy. And I can't blame you for picking it. With that being said, I would go with Formiga decision.
Oh, look, no, my official pick is Formiga by decision. I'm just saying, if you want to make a little extra dough, you want to take it a little, you want to, you know, risk it a little bit.
Put your name on it, Jason. Don't just go with the 15 different predictions. Of course, one of them is going to be right. If you're like, well, look, I like Formiga decision. It could be.
I'm telling you, I think when we recap this fight card, we're going to be talking about a bunch of decisions.
Oh man,
I'm counting. I have, and when comes my picks, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I have 8 fights going the distance.
Okay, so I don't look. I let the picks come to me. I don't produce the picks, Jason. So I haven't really figured out how many decisions I believe will be on this card. But I do think the main event and co-main event really colored my idea of how this card is going to play out in terms of finishes, because I would anticipate those two fights going down quickly. I guess I would ask you, you're telling me that Betch Kure and Marion Renault is not going to end in the first round?
Oh, that is going 15 minutes.
Those two finishers. Yeah.
I would be fairly surprised if that fight, it does not go the distance.
Yeah, me too, man. I just simply think that Correa and Renault, I don't necessarily think of them and think, oh, these people are going to finish fight in the first round. It's a must win for both fighters. I mean, main event, co-main event are crossroads, but you can make the case that it is the same for Correa and Renault, because Renault's 39. She looked really good against Andrade and then kind of stumbled. And then Correa, in her own right, peaked really early in her career with the title shot against Ronda Rousey, looked rough against Pennington, returned to form against Jessica Ai. The loser, this one's going to have some issues to work with. I think Correa's going to win this fight, though.
Yeah, I've got to win by decision, but one thing about Betch Kureha, 9 of her 12 fights have gone the distance.
Yeah, is there a prop bet for Correa saying something stupid? Because she always does.
Oh, yeah, that's a good possibility.
She always says something offensive that she doesn't understand is offensive. So I'm taking that prop bet. I think it's plus 1,500.
Alex Oliveira and Tim Means is going to kick off the main card on FS1 on Saturday night. Starts at 10 p.m. Eastern time. Of course, a rematch from the UFC 207 fight. We ended up being a no contest. It was due to Means landing illegal strikes to a down opponent that was deemed by the referee. And now these two guys are going to go at it. You know, the first fight, it was going Tim Means' way. And I think that's exactly the way it's going to play out here. And I think he gets a stoppage victory in the second round.
Yeah, I like the prop bet. Fight won't start round 3, minus 131. Give me that one, because these two fools, this one ain't a decision. It could be, don't get me wrong. Both these guys are incredibly tough, but they're more violent than they are tough, and that speaks a lot to their level of violence. I think Tim Means is the pick, largely due to the fact that watching their last fight, it was clearly going in his direction. So as long as he doesn't commit a stupid move and put himself up to get finished by a very tough fighter, a very great transition type fighter in Oliveira. Tim Means is the pick, and like you, I think we see a stoppage. And if it's a stoppage, it's likely due to strikes.
When it comes to the prelims, of course, you're going to have the early prelims on UFC Fight Pass. It'll start at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time. And then the TV prelims, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time. In terms of the fight on the prelims that I'm probably the most interested in would actually be Hani Yahya and Joe Soto. They're at 135 pounds. When it comes to fighters that I'm interested in seeing the most, Davi Ramos.
He's a late replacement, right, against Sergio Moraes?
Correct, yeah. He replaced Max Griffin.
Yeah, and what a great replacement. I mean, Ramos is a guy with just an incredible, incredible track record as a jiu-jitsu fighter. And I think you look at some of his fights, he showcases a little bit more diversity to his game. But he does kind of have a tough task going up against Sergio Moraes. I don't think many people, when discussing the 170-pound division, talk about Sergio Moraes. But he has an incredible amount of talent. I don't know if Ramos is going to be able to come out here and win this fight, Jason.
I'll tell you, you know what's crazy to me when I was looking at the prop bets? I mean, everyone knows about Davi Ramos and his jiu-jitsu pedigree. Davi Ramos by submission, plus 949.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Just take that, man. Just put a couple buckaroos on that one. I mean, I think you got the type of – I understand Sergio is no slouch on the ground. I mean, he is incredibly talented on the ground. But at the end of the day, like, you know, Ramos has established himself as an elite-type jiu-jitsu fighter, obviously. So the fact that that's – I mean, if Ramos gets a finish, it's going to be that way.
And, oh, yeah, no question.
Yeah, despite the fact that Moraes has much more experience, bigger track record, deserves to be the favorite, Ramos is a live dog in this fight. And there's a real scenario where we're talking about Ramos pretty early on in our post-fight show. I'm going with the safe pick. Like, I like Moraes. The fact that Ramos is a late replacement doesn't help me feel confident about it. But, damn, this guy has a real weapon to play with his grappling game.
I'm going to pick Ramos to win by upset. I think he gets the decision victory. I have all four fights on the FS1 prelims going to decision.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's pretty much, I mean, you hate to use the L word as in a lock, but I almost feel like it's a lock that Prezeris and Berkman's going all 15 minutes.
I wouldn't say that because I think it's not a lock. I think it's incredibly likely. But Berkman's the type of fighter where I could see him get flash KO'd. Still, but I don't think, when I think flash KO, I don't think that Mikel Prezeris is the type of fighter that's going to deliver on said flash KO. I see what you're picking up. This is when you do get a lot of the decisions. I think Lee and Trinaldo, that's a guarantee to go to a decision.
Yeah. I like Kevin Lee in that matchup.
Me too, man. And it's worth noting that Francisco Trinaldo has won 7 straight UFC fights. So, like.
But does that tell you something about what they think of him?
yeah, it does.
Like, if, you know, any guy who's won 7 in a row, you're not fighting on the prelims of a fight night card.
Yeah.
You know, it just, and it comes down to his style. He just has a style that isn't exactly the most exciting to watch.
Yeah, and I think Kevin Lee's going to be the one to end that streak, man. I mean, Kevin Lee, you talk about fighters that flash upside time and again, he's one of those guys. Great improvement in this game, great ability to tie everything together. And I think he gets the win there. And then Soto and Yahya, you're right, that's a great fight. I could see that one ending early and maybe an exchange on the ground in terms of grappling. But
that would be an interesting match if that goes to the ground. I think it stays on the feet.
Yeah, yeah. And so and when you think of the ground game, you think of Hani Yahya, but Soto's pretty good too. On the feet, I would favor Soto slightly. Yahya is obviously, like, his evolution as a fighter. He's incredibly different than his original run in the UFC. I think I like the momentum Joe Soto has and the way he's kind of taking his game in this UFC run after some failures early on. I like Soto to win.
Yeah, I like Soto to win by decision. I like Kevin Lee. As I said, I'm going to go with Ramos with the upset there and Prezeris by decision. When it comes to the fight pass prelims, I like Jeremy Kennedy by decision over Hani Jason, and I'm going to go with Paulo Henrique Costa by TKO in the second round.
Ooh, okay. I'm going to go with Costa. I'm going to go TKO. I'm going to go third round, Jason. I feel very confident about that one. And I think Ronnie Jason loses this one. I just, I'm all out on Ronnie Jason. It probably says less about Jeremy Kennedy and more about Hani Jason, but some of these losses are rough, and whenever he gets wins, he tests positive for hydrochlorothiazine or whatever.
So just to recap, my picks are Kelvin Gastelum, Mauricio Shogun-Hua, Benil Dariush, Jesse Formiga, Betch Gohea, Tim Means, Kevin Lee, Davi Ramos, Joe Soto, Mikel Prezarius, Jeremy Kennedy, and Paulo Enrique Costa. And Daniel, just remind everyone who you're taking.
My picks are Costa, Kennedy, Prezarius, Soto, Moraes, Kevin Lee, Tim Means, Betch Correa, Jesse Formiga, Edson Barboza, Shogun-Hua, and Kelvin Gastelum.
And coming up on Friday night, of course, so we're recording this here on Friday morning. On Friday night on Access TV, you have Legacy Fighting Alliance 6 has coming from San Antonio, Texas. In terms of what has me the most interested on this fight card, I got to first off look at the co-main event, which is a catchweight bout of 190 pounds. Eric Anders, who's 6-0 in his pro career, is going to take on John Kirk. I've talked to Eric plenty of times. He's made that transition from the football field to MMA. Definitely that is a fight to pay attention to. And the other one, that card that you have to pay attention to, is another catchweight bout. This one's 120 pounds as Mackenzie Dern's going to take on Catherine Roy. There was a lot of talk back and forth on Thursday after the weigh-ins about was this already a catchweight matchup. There seemed to be some thought that initially when this bout was booked, it was actually a 115-pound matchup. But, you look at Mackenzie Dern, and I wonder if maybe starts to become a correlation between her and Henry Cejudo. Henry Cejudo had some issues, you know, with making weight when he was in Legacy. So I think, you know, going forward, you wonder, is Mackenzie truly a 115-pound fighter, or is maybe she the reason that potentially the UFC may ultimately bring in a 125-pound division?
Yeah, she's incredibly consistent at missing weight. I think she's 125 pounds, I think, at some point in time. You got to come back to the reality of, like, you know, don't be a Henry Cejudo. Be a Joseph Benavides. Like, make your weight. Thus far in her career, she has not done a good job at that. I hate these stupid headlines when you look up her name and she's talking about, I'm not going to be the next Ronda Rousey. Like, listen, fool, Ronda Rousey is the best women's fighter of all time. Amanda Nunes may come at that crown at some point in time, but quit talk about Ronda Rousey when you're a 23-year-old with no quality wins in the sport and you can't make weight. Mackenzie Dern is probably going to be incredibly talented, but get your house in order first and like, make weight, win fights. And then you can talk about being Ronda Rousey, but in all likelihood, the most likely outcome is you not being Ronda Rousey, because that is an incredibly tall mountain to climb.
Yeah, and so that'll be on Friday night on Access TV. Looking forward to watch that. Then on Saturday, you have ACB 54 from Manchester, England. As I mentioned earlier, you can watch that fight card for free on Fight TV. Just download that app, Fight, FITE.TV /radioinfluence/. This is, when you talk about cards outside of the UFC and Bellator, I mean, you hate to use the word stack, but that probably is the best way to describe this fight card. Is when you look at just the names that are on this fight card, there are some fighters who are supposed to be on this card, no longer on it. Vinny Magulace, he pulls out due to an injury. Pat Healy pulls out due to injury as well. But I mean, you look at the main event, solid matchup there, looking forward to that one. A lot of notable fights. Bubba Jenkins is scheduled to be on this card as well. He was a guy that just recently got signed by ACB. ACB spent a ton of money bringing guys in. Also, Brian Kelleher is another guy I'm very interested to see on this fight card, a guy that, you know, he's been on a nice little roll. You would think that maybe the UFC would be interested in getting in his business at some point. Tanner Bozer's also in this fight card. My understanding is Tanner was actually nearly signed by the UFC to fight on that Halifax card, but there were some visa issues so that ultimately did not happen. But overall, this ACB card, if you're not doing anything on Saturday afternoon, I believe the main card is going to start at 1 p.m. Eastern time. This is definitely a card to check out.
Yeah, and you mentioned Bozer. I mean, that's a high-level prospect in terms of, like, guy. And when I say prospect, like, this kid is 25 years old. Like, he's older than me. He's fighting a guy who isn't particularly talented. But anytime you have a 25-year-old heavyweight with a positive record, you feel potential about what he could be in the UFC. I would anticipate a win for him. And this ACB card in England, man, they're, like you mentioned, it is not – there isn't one fight in particular that you look at and you think this is phenomenal, but you go up and down this lineup, it loses, like the Pat Healy fight, and there is just names galore that you are familiar with. And, I would be interested actually if you go to the Manchester Arena, which is where this card is, and you crowd size is going to be like, but this is worth a watch. And maybe if you don't watch it live, you can catch some of the highlights or the replays on YouTube.
I mean, it's going to be a long night of fights there. 18 total fights are scheduled for that ACB car. So I'm definitely going to try to check it out. I've got to do my business taxes this weekend, Daniel. So that's always fun.
Yeah, yeah. I don't get why you do taxes. Your parents can't claim you?
No. I'm old, man. I'm old. Can't do it anymore. I'm always a guy. I wait till the last minute to do taxes, whether it's personal or my business taxes. I always wait till the last minute.
No, just don't pay them. Nothing will happen.
Yeah, sure. You have that thought process. Yeah.
You can go and meet Wesley Snipes.
Yeah, you know, I guess I'm just used to cutting that check to the IRS. That's what happens, you know. When you get older and, you know, I guess ultimately it's a good thing if you have to cut a check to the IRS. It means you're doing well.
It means you can cut checks to people and you can buy an Amazon Echo.
Do you have an Amazon Echo?
No, Jason. I don't want to get some type of technology that can spy on me. And I feel like Amazon Echo is just something like, I don't want to talk to a damn robot, you know. I just I don't want to have a conversation, and then the Echo's eavesdropping and it's butting in. So no, I don't, Jason.
And then all of a sudden, it just starts playing some music for you.
Yeah, I don't want that. I don't want ear pods. I think we should just stop with the technological advancements. I think we've peaked, and then chill out. You know, I don't want to watch a UFC card on Mars in 15 years.
But we will be watching a UFC card this weekend. UFC Fight Night 106. We'll have a post-fight show after the conclusion of this event. By the way, next week there is no preview podcast for UFC Fight Night 107, as I'm going to be taking a couple of days off. So, but we will we'll have a post-fight show for that. So that's all coming up here on the MMA Report. Of course, always, you can check out the MMA Report on Radio Influence, also iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review to the podcast. Also, be sure to check out this week's episode of the MMA Report podcast, as I talked about some of the latest news and notes going on in the world of MMA. Also, I was joined by Angel DeAnda, who's got a fight coming up here at Global Knockout 9. I also talked to Shamrock FC 285 headliners Garrett Muir and Steven Nguyen. Both those, that event is actually on Saturday night. Talked to Demir Prahat Begovic and Devin Chavez. So look on that for the MMA Report podcast. So let's go wrap it up for this edition of the MMA Report podcast, which you hear every week on RadioInfluence.com.
This is a Valor Hour Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
We are back on the Valor Hour. Casey Oxendine alongside the president of Valor Fights, Tim Loy. And we are talking the main event from Valor Fights 40. And we have with us Edward Massey, the ninja. What a fight it was. You came in. It's been a long, storied past for you as an amateur. Ups and downs, a lot of things. And you come into Valor 40 as the main event, moving in as a 3-0 professional. You know, so after all of that as an amateur, you come in as a 3-0 professional, and you win in your hometown. Talk about it.
Man, my amateur career, it had its ups and downs due to an injury. I've always had great talent and a great mindset. I guess now that, you know, the injury's all taken care of and everything, I can now get out there and display that and show you guys a little more of what I can do. And but you know, man, the win felt good. It did. I've been doing a lot of things here in town and trying to motivate, you know, some of the guys in the gym, and I think the win really helped motivate them a little bit and show them that, you know, hey, you know, let's get more active too, to, you know, so we can end up like Massey more a little bit, you know, like I've been really trying to push things here at the gym, but really the win really mattered a lot, you know, to show the guys that, you know, hey, if we motivate and get the moving, we can end up doing this too. So it felt good, man. As for the fight, man, I enjoyed the fight and everything. I wasn't really satisfied with how I did. I looked at the tape and everything. I see why I won and everything, but I felt like I had more, you know. I felt like I put in more in the practice and everything, and I didn't really get to display everything. So definitely gonna look into how I rehydrate and everything and regain my weight after weighing in, because I think that had a lot to do with it. But other than that, man, the win felt good.
What did you not like about it? Because from my perspective, and of course I called the fight, you had complete control. It looked like you're putting that left hand on him at will. Is it that you were unable to finish the fight, or was it the, you know, as far as the scrambles and so forth, do you wish you had been able to get ahead a little more in the scrambles? Of course you were taken down a couple times. What was it that, you know, stood out that you did not like?
What stood out that I didn't like was, my speed. I'm way faster than that than I showed in there, you know. I throw way faster in the gym, and that's with 16s on. The pressure, like I can pressure way better than that. Although usually, you know, sometimes I show that I can be an outside fighter and everything else like that, but I can definitely pressure that. I should have went in for the kill a lot more. I had them backed up a few times, and I could have capitalized on a few openings I had, and I didn't like that. The scrambles, the time I did get taken down was, you know, was me being lazy, really, and that shouldn't happen. I believe that was in the third round. I kind of just sat there and was just like, you know, I'm already winning on the scorecards. I controlled the longest amount of the third that I needed to. So I knew I was ahead of the scorecard, so I figured I can just wait it out on the ground. I should have been, you know, still more getting at it, you know, and continue on. Although it looked like I kept a good pace and everything, I felt like I gassed a little bit close into the second, but I picked it back up in the third. But I felt like I gassed, and I felt like I could have, you know, my arms were a little heavy, so I'm going to have to definitely looking, you know, I was definitely been boosting up my cardio because I've been to practice ever since that. But yeah, those are the main things that stood out to me.
You know, I've got the president here, Tim Loy, and I don't know if you guys have actually spoken since the fight, but Tim, what was your take on the fight?
Yeah, I think Edward looked great, man. That was one of those fights where stylistically I thought it might be tough for him because it was definitely a different type opponent than we had for him originally. He was supposed to be with Nick Sprayberry, who was, you know, definitely a striker himself. You know, and I feel like just from me, you know, from the outside looking in, I thought that maybe Zach would have a little bit more grind to him that would make it hard for you to get off like you wanted to. But he didn't really fight like that, and so he kind of played into your game plan. And so you look good, man. I thought you were crisp, and 4-0, congratulations, man. What do you think? Like, I know you said there was an injury earlier in your as an amateur, but like, I mean, you know, Not to rip on your amateur career or anything, but I was never just like blown away, you know. But now as a pro, you've really turned things around and, you know, and put it all together. You know, do you think it's being able to use your knees and elbows and things like that more, maybe?
Man, I think as a pro, I just got my mind right. That's mainly it. You know, there was a lot of adjusting I had to do in the cage, and I, for some reason, man, I just, one night I just kind of sat there and I started thinking, you know, of ways. I just started to get my mind right, you know, and had a long talk with a good friend of mine, and he, you know, he got motivated and I got motivated, and we just started getting out there hitting it. And I felt like just me getting my mind right was the main thing as a pro that really just set everything into motion for me. Like now, you know, I actually study. I kind of, you know, I look more in depth in my opponent and everything. And just, you know, the mindset, I feel like I just grown. I feel like I just gotten a little older in the fight game a little bit, you know, a little bit more advanced. And yeah, that's basically it, man.
So we're going to have to close you out here in just a second, but I did want to ask you, you know, there aren't a whole lot of people that are you know, screaming the name Edward Massey. And like I said, I have been a huge proponent for you. Of course, you did Arena Combat, you know, 2 years ago. Anybody that does that, I have a special fondness for, because it takes a lot of guts. And so you began to, of course, stand out at that point. Then I started to follow your fights after that, and I became extremely impressed. And by this fight, of course, I was a huge fan. Of course, your fight in there in Middle Tennessee, I guess in Cookeville, I mean, it was a war. I'm a huge fan. What do you want to tell to all those people that, you know, before this fight really, you know, haven't given Edward Massey a fair shake? You know, what have you got planned for this career, man? Or are you going to go all the way?
Oh, man, that was always the main goal, was to go all the way. I wouldn't just put myself in harm's way if I wasn't planning on going all the way with it. What I have to tell those people that don't believe in me, if you don't believe now, you will believe later. I'm not stopping. Right now, I'm on a freight train. I'm ready to run, ready to run through anybody. My mind is right. My training is right. And, I'm going to make it. That's all there is to it. Like, I will make it.
The Valor Hour with Tim Loy and Casey Oxendine can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.